My name is Lizom Guni, and I'm the spokesperson for Old Mutual Insure. We are very excited to bring you this podcast, which forms part of a series that supports the very prestigious 2023 South African Car of the Year competition, sponsored by Old Mutual Insure and presented by the South African Guild of Mobility Journalists. Talk with us on our socials with the hashtag SACOTI2023. The 2023 South African Car of the Year competition, which Old Mutual Insure sponsors, is gearing up to crown the country's ultimate vehicle champion later this year in June. With a long-standing history dating back to 1986, this prestigious event showcases the pinnacle of innovation and excellence in the automotive industry. The top 21 finalists for the competition were recently announced, but many car enthusiasts and families who use COTI to make purchasing decisions may be wondering what goes into determining who are the cream of the crop. Why are they the worthy contenders? Today I'm joined by COTI jury members Brenren Naidu, award-winning journalist and motoring editor of the Sowetan and Sunday Times at Arena Holdings, Lerato Matebese, co-founder of Clipping Point Publishing, which publishes Top Gear magazine South Africa, and the Mail and Guardian Motoring, as well as Michelle York, General Manager of the South African Guild of Mobility Journalists. Both Brenren and Lerato are World Car of the Year jurors, a real feather in the cap for COTI, I'm sure. Together, we are going to unpack why excellence is often more than meets the eye and what it means in the context of this competition. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So to get the discussion kicked off, let's first get an understanding of what excellence means to each of our juror guests. Lerato, you're on my left today, so I'll kick off with you.
Okay, so in the context of looking at our Car of the Year finalists, really what we're looking for is advancement and innovation, really. So a car needs to have push the envelope of what we deem innovation in that segment. So if it's move the goalposts forward, then that's what we're looking for. So the car has to have done something extraordinary for it to be considered a Car of the Year finalist. So essentially, that's what we're looking for, is innovation and automotive excellence, as we call it.
Right up Old Mutual Insure's alley there, always trying to move the goalposts forward and advance our customers in their lives. Yeah. Brenren, what would you say that means to you?
Well, I think excellence means various things to various people. You know, we all have different criterion when looking for a car. But, you know, I think in the context of the competition, excellence pretty much slaps you in the face. You know, a vehicle is great when you see it, or whether it's lacking in certain areas. But, you know, I also think this concept of excellence in this round of the competition is tempered with more of a pragmatic aspect in terms of value. These are tough economic times, okay? And I think the average consumer wants as much as he or she can get at a price that's competitive. And I think that's where you're going to see more of your newer contenders establish brands that are sort of on the up coming to the fore, in particular your Chinese manufacturers.
I was just about to say the Chinese manufacturers have definitely come into the South African market and caused a bit of a stir, especially in that value for money segments where consumers are, like you're saying, under a lot of pressure and trying to get the bang for their buck when they're making those purchasing decisions. Michelle, what would you say excellence means to you?
In this context, I think excellence forces competitors to step up. You know, as soon as a car comes out and you think, wow, that for the segment, that is something. Someone's going to come out and do it better. And it keeps everyone on their toes. And without, you know, that constant striving for excellence, you know, there would be no evolution and moving forward. So I think it's very important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% agree with that. And maybe just to keep it with you, Michelle, as the general manager of COTI, what does excellence mean in the context of COTI, especially 37 years after the very first competition?
Absolutely. The first COTI competition was held in 1986, if you can believe that. And I'm sure that those jurors could not have imagined that vehicles would have evolved quite so spectacularly in the last 36 years. And, you know, we have to keep adjusting and changing, and excellence now starts taking into account things like electric and hybrid vehicles. Everything is constantly growing and evolving as it needs to be.
Yes, I can certainly relate to that, Michelle. To us at Old Mutual Insure, excellence simply means being able to be a trustworthy partner in our customers' lives. We want our customers to remember us for being there when they needed us the most, always providing excellent service to them, and for being a reliable partner that has been paying their valid claims for over 190 years. And I think it is fair to say that similarly, Coty has gained a reputation for being a competition that the public relies on to make important decisions. It's all about rewarding excellence in the automotive industry. So on that point, let's get into this year's finalists. There are some fantastic names on the list, and it feels like there is a car for everyone on here, no matter what stage of life you're in and where you are in the country. How hard was it to get the final list ready, jurors? And how did the selection and scoring work?
Thanks for that question, Lisa. It's quite a painstaking process, really, which involves voting by guild members or the Guild of Mobility members, the journalists themselves. We literally, and Michelle will help me with this, we look at cars that were launched during a specific time frame, which is now, what, about 18 months?
So we look at all the vehicles that were launched from 1 January to 15 December, and we draw up a list. So regardless of whether it was a fully fledged new vehicle or just a vehicle that had been slightly upgraded, all of them are on the list. The COTI committee then validates the vehicles or ratifies them. So they will sit and look at every single vehicle. Is there enough? Because, you know, there'll be a Corolla this year and a Corolla next year and a Corolla next year. Is the change between the previous vehicle and the new vehicle, is it a mechanical change? In other words, is it a facelift or is it a mechanical change?
Yeah.
If it's an all-new vehicle, that list then gets given to all the members of the South African Guild of Mobility Journalists to vote on, which narrows it down to the semi-finalists. From there, it then gets handed to the jurors. So the jurors just do we call it a paper vote,
yes.
Because they have been exposed to the car throughout the year. They will then vote for the finalists. So they will take the jurors' vote. And then from there, the actual physical evaluation begins.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for that, Michelle. So yeah, quite a comprehensive list of like hurdles that the cars have to go through. Quite a lot of meticulous kind of understanding of whether a car has been updated just almost cosmetically, or is it an actual change that was mechanical as well? So yeah, quite stringent entry requirements there. Let's hear a little bit more about the formal voting process.
Okay, so the actual voting process, or the formal voting process, includes obviously, as now, we've got the finalists. As Michelle had mentioned, there will be semi-finalists, and from that list, we'll still whittle it down. We still validate whether those vehicles are worthy for being there, and we put certain weighting on those lists to actually come down to this 21 vehicles that we have, which is quite a lot if you consider the actual mechanics behind actually testing all these vehicles, which I'll also get to, which we do over the test days. But the lists have become longer, and we have to do it because of obviously all the segments that are now growing. I mean, we've got things from a compact family car, a mid-size car, a premium adventure SUV, double cab, luxury, performance, and the new energy, which we were talking about, which includes hybrids and electric vehicles. So all these vehicles, essentially, sometime in March, we'll put them all through the test and basically verify the actual winner overall, but also categorically in the different segments, we will obviously find a winner within those segments. We have to literally sit down and score the vehicles out of a series of
48 questions,
sure. Which you really need to sit down and consider, sometimes sleep on it, just to make sure that you're making the right decision. So it is quite a painstaking process, which I'm sure Brendan will add to that as well.
Indeed, I think one of the great things about South African Car of the Year is that it's underpinned by actual hands-on testing historically it was Gerotech test facility, and we're probably going to reintroduce that this year. COVID made things difficult in the last round. But in any case, I mean, at that venue, you experience a variety of, I don't want to call them obstacles because that might imply that the cars, you know, leave scathed, which they usually don't. But just a series of tests that the that emulate what the average South African consumer would encounter on roads. You know, you've got your high speed, your Belgian paving, which is great because we all know the state of our roads in the country. Skidpan, which we all enjoy, obviously all in the name of testing. So that's really great. And, you know, that really, in my view, puts the competition beyond reproach. These cars are being tested. You know, it's not just a scoring-based system. The car of the year winner that ultimately gets chosen is chosen for a very good reason.
Awesome. Thank you, Brendan. Thanks, Lerato. I just wonder if you had to sleep on some of the more performance cars a little bit longer than some of the other cars and maybe test drive those over 3 or 4 days just to make sure that they make the cut.
I'll keep the keys.
Look, I think, Lisa, people are very partial to performance cars. It was quite obvious this year as well. We saw a lot of performance cars obviously coming up to the surface, where a lot of people were voting for performance cars, but we have a category for that. But obviously, it's not the sportiest car that will win, essentially. We look at a lot of things, but, you know, as Brendan had alluded earlier, value for money is quite a huge component of why we choose a specific vehicle. So we look at that. And as you'd mentioned, you know, a lot of household incomes are quite under pressure, and people are looking at the best value for money proposition, which for us, it's great to see, you know, up and coming brands really, really coming in and giving value. And the Chinese marks are really just absolutely rattling the cage of, you know, the more established brands, by just bringing value. So people are almost relearning what value for money is. People are not longer just buying a brand because it's a brand. They're all looking for value for money, but obviously convenience, safety, is something that's still paramount when people buy a vehicle. So those are the things we judge as well. Connectivity is a huge thing in cars now. A lot of our cars are basically like smartphones now, where people want to remain connected. People are doing business while they're driving and all of that stuff. So that those are quite important things. And we are seeing those kind of trickle down into even the very base models, where that is quite important. But to answer your question, performance cars will always be there. That's what excites us, right? But we have to have a pragmatic approach to say, okay, what does this car really represent in the South African context? What is happening around us? Is this the car that we need to choose going forward? A lot of performance cars are expensive, yes, but a very small sort of public can actually afford those vehicles, right? And it's really it's more of an emotional purchase and not something that you'd think through.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
you know, I think over the years, Car of the Year has had some very, very controversial winners. I mean, even in its early days, 1988, when the BMW 735i won. And, you know, at the time, it was one of the most expensive cars you could buy. And then, of course, there was the phase where Porsche took victory on more than one occasion. And that, you know, inevitably that raised eyebrows. So I was quite happy last year to see, you know, to see a very sort of, you know, return to sanity, almost with the Corolla Cross. You know, it's a great car. Mm-hmm. It's locally manufactured to a very high standard. And it's a car that South Africans, buy, you know, I mean, the sales figures for that car are really impressive. It's a return to sanity for Coty. Of course, we're awarding excellence, but, you know, I mean, if the sky was the limit, then I suppose you'd have a Bugatti or a Rolls Royce, you know, taking the crown, but that's not relevant to the majority of consumers. But yes, I think we've got a really excellent field. As much as they're diverse, I think these are cars that are all more or less attainable for the most part, save perhaps for your high echelon of performance, which Lerato spoke about now. And yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting and possibly very close competition.
Fantastic. I'm starting to realize why I'm probably not qualified to be a COTI juror because I would only be interested in maybe one or two segments. But just to refresh, the COTI categories include quite a lot more categories than just the one I'm interested in. Including a budget category, a compact category, a compact family category, mid-size premium adventure SUV, 4x4 double cab, which is very popular in South Africa. I've seen quite a lot of those around. Luxury, performance, and new energy categories, which is very topical at the moment with the push to go green and the sustainable future that we're all trying to build. The budget category does not have contenders on this year's finalist list. At OM Insure, we have seen how customers have been impacted in the last year due to the tough economic times, the rampant inflation that was quite high last year, and the interest rates consecutively being increased. I think even this year, into the early part of this year even, they've been increased again now. So our focus has really been about finding new ways to help our customers remain adequately insured in these uncertain times. So given the current tough financial times, why weren't there any contenders in this budget category? Maybe I'll start with you, Brenwyn.
Yes, well, I was also quite disappointed to see that there was nothing in there. There were cars that were on the list. We had Suzuki's Celerio, Baleno, and the Toyota Starlet. But, it seems that they didn't make the cut, unfortunately. I think going forward, what we might need to do is, just implement a price ceiling, because these things are moving forward. The budget, what we deemed as budget and affordable 2-3 years ago is perhaps no longer the case. So, these points need to be refined going forward. I'm new to this Car of the Year committee. I haven't participated in previous years. And the Guild is certainly also on a push to tidy things up and, to refine these processes. So I think, going forward, we definitely need to emphasize more on the budget aspect.
Absolutely. I think it's also a question relevant to you, Michelle. And, as you say, those many hurdles and qualifying criteria that we have before we drill down to that top 21. What can we do to just make sure that list is more relevant to what customers are going through financially as well?
I think just looking at, the mass of vehicle, I don't want to say mass, but I mean the amount of vehicles in the compact family category, that sort of not quite entry level. Yes, there's a lot of movement. I think our problem is that the really good budget vehicle gems, you don't get 4 or 5 of them a year. The one that really makes everyone sit up and take notice, I don't know, I would say, guys, once every 2 years. 3 years.
I'm inclined to agree. I think, and Lorato will weigh in on this as well, because we love budget cars. We love cars that are relevant to the mass market. Yeah, like Michelle said, they're just not many launched every year. I really could only reference one A-segment car, and that was the Celerio that was launched in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and just speaking to that requirements or criteria that you mentioned, not many that had maybe been mechanically updated in the last year, because we know there's quite a lot of superficial changes that might happen or might occur in that budget segment, and not necessarily mechanical upgrades that meet that qualifying criteria.
There are a few suggestions on the table where we do drill down and find a budget car of the year, whether we look at all the cars that are available in the market, which goes outside of what COTI normally does. But I think here it would be nice to find the best budget car in South Africa in terms of running costs, insurance costs. There's so many things, and be able to say to consumers, buying a car is the second biggest cash outlay in your life besides buying a house. Let us show you, learn about it so that you purchase wisely.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's quite an important buying decision. And as you say, there's a lot of other implications it has on customers' budgets and so on. They have to pay for petrol. They have to pay for insurance, as you said.
So, absolutely.
All those aspects are critically important during these times. Just come back to you, Lorato. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I think there's quite gravitas to what Michelle is saying, but that sort of segment is morphing every day, where a lot of cars that we consider to be budget cars, in the next generation, they just become a little bit bigger. There's more technology and stuff. And by virtue of that, they move into a bigger segment, right? They become more expensive and stuff. So the budget, you know, segment, as we call it now, vehicles there that are very good are few and far between, right? There are cars that are considered budget because of, you know, the capital outlay, the sticker price. It is relatively cheap. But also, if we scratch the surface and see why the specific car is cheap, you'll find that there's aspects where safety equipment has been deleted from the car, which as motoring journalists, we are very prudent to say, do not buy a car that is not safe. Right. And this is the argument we've had with OEMs and manufacturers, that we can't keep bringing cars, you know, that are have subpar safety standards just for the sake of, you know, getting people mobile into cars. So that segment is really becoming a bit of a red herring, maybe is the word, or maybe it's too far. But we are finding budget cars really aren't what they're supposed to be. And I, for one, I would love to see a South African car that lands here that's got all the basic safety equipment and a little bit of the frills, but not compromising on the safety aspect, right? Absolutely. Which is quite important for us. So if a car it doesn't meet certain safety criteria, you know, by virtue, it's we're not going to consider it because of those very reasons, which is why I would ask somebody or recommend someone to buy a pre-owned car that's 3 or 4 years old, that's got all the safety equipment, instead of just, you know, saying, okay, it's a nice to have, you buy a brand spanking new car, but guess what? You know, it's not the safest thing you can get out there. So we need to consider those things, and we weigh those quite heavily. So I would say there's a lot of work for us to do, but we can also work. We can only work with what manufacturers bring to South Africa. So we really would like to see our government legislating the safety of cars and saying we can't bring a certain car into the market because it doesn't meet our minimum safety requirements and criteria.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very important topic, and I'm glad you raised it. Definitely, you know, it speaks to slack legislation. Manufacturers take advantage of that. You know, if it's got safety belts, it's cool. But, you know, that's not what we want. And, you know, it is possible. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, VW launched the Up, which had 4 airbags, ABS, and ESP. So manufacturers can do it. You know, so let's hope that in the coming years, we see a greater proliferation of well-equipped, safe, affordable compacts. That's what the market needs.
Thanks for that, Brenren and Lorato. Old Mutual definitely supports safer vehicles being on our roads. And we do recognize that that would also lead to lower premiums for South African customers who are stretched at this moment in time. Old Mutual Insure is excited to power the impactful COTI competition, which has not only rewarded excellence, but also raised automotive benchmarks over the years. Quality and innovation in the world of motoring would ultimately also benefit short-term insurance customers, as safer vehicles, for instance, would likely lead to less accidents, hijackings, and theft, as we briefly touched on just before. The indirect benefits to the customers is one of the key aspects that attracted us to come on board as headline sponsor. So let's chat about how the 2023 COTI finalists showcase cutting edge innovation. I'll maybe start with you this time, Lorato.
Okay, so cutting edge innovation, as I'd mentioned at the beginning of our podcast, is that we're essentially looking for a car that has advanced technology, innovation, it could be safety, but value for money, once again, becomes the overbearing sort of factor in why we choose a car. But ultimately, the vehicle needs to have moved the game onward. So if we look at vehicles that were launched in the previous cycle or whatever the case is, we look at a car and say, okay, this is a little bit different to what everyone else is doing. So we'll look at those aspects and say, okay, fine. You know, this car Brendan has mentioned, the Up was one of those vehicles that it was a compact car, but had lofty amounts of safety equipment just crammed into the car without really pushing the price bracket of the car, you know, to astronomical levels. So we look at those aspects, but the car needs to be a game changer. And that is what Coty ultimately looks out for or looks for in a car of the year winner. So innovation is very, very, very key for us. So yes, you know, cars are advancing at a very alarming rate. So it does get a little bit difficult now because everyone is quite competitive in terms of, you know, standardizing what we consider innovation or whatever the case is. But there will be cars that will stand out head and shoulders. But we have to go now and seek for those vehicles, which has become over the years. I mean, I've been doing this now for close to a decade, and I've seen the huge, you know, change where we'd go into the test days. Immediately on the first day of testing, there'll be five or six cars that just spring up at the top and they're right there. And I found over the years, it's become more and more difficult where you have to literally deliberate your top 10 cars where all of them have, you know, an argument to put forward where you really now literally, it's like splitting hairs where you have to now look at which car has really pushed the envelope. But also that is telling of manufacturers are really also kind of pushing and making cars just better. And OEMs are really just pushing the envelope now to say, you know, we will bring a specific car that has all the bells and whistles, safety equipment, all of that stuff, and still be, you know, a value for money proposition. So this year's list is quite interesting. And I think we might have a pleasant surprise in terms of who we crown our car of the year. And we are seeing more and more of just great cars from you know, hailing from China. So yeah, for me, I think it's going to be interesting. The Japanese and the Germans, I think, have a thing or two coming their way because, you know, the economy is what it is. And value for money will always just, yeah, trump everything else.
The category that fascinates me is the new energy category with the Audi e-tron GT, the Haval H6 Hybrid, the Toyota RAV4 E4, and the Volvo XC40 P8 Recharge being on the list. Let us talk through this category, what it means, and why is it on the list? Over to you, Brendan.
You know, earlier I spoke about controversial car of the year winners. And as much as there were those anomalies, you know, there were many winners throughout the course that reflected what was relevant at the time. For example, in the early 2000s, when diesel was in fashion, there were 3 years where diesel cars won. And well, now we all know it's the era of the electric vehicle, of electrification, hybrids, full EVs. And we've got quite an interesting field here this year. At the top of the pile, of course, in terms of performance, which I know you love, is Audi's RS e-tron GT, which really is a spectacular vehicle for anyone who's had the privilege of experiencing it. Not only does it deliver spellbinding performance, it's also just a real design marvel. You know, the materials used in its construction, its interior, and all the rest. It's a game changer. Of course, shares most of its identity with the Porsche Taycan, but Audi, I think, has sufficiently given it its own flavor. And then on the more realistic side of the scale, you've got your Haval HX Hybrid and the RAV4, Toyota RAV4 E4, both self-charging hybrids. The Haval, Lerato spent an extended time with it recently, and I drove it last year on test, and we were just saying, you know, this car is so committed to staying on its electric powertrain. It's amazing. I mean, you're getting ridiculously low consumption figures, and, you know, it's one of those hybrids that make complete sense. But you know, you could say very similar of the Toyota. That, of course, brings in, you know, all those benefits of the Toyota dealer network and, you know, just that brand affinity that South Africans have with Toyota. And then, of course, you know, we've got the XC40 P8 Recharge, which is one of the most affordable full electric vehicles on sale in the country. Of course, you know, it's still relatively pricey, being over the million rand mark. But, you know, in terms of EVs, That's sort of what you're going to be looking at. So a really exciting field of contenders there.
Sorry, Brendan, can I ask you a question? Is it the Volvo that you can run your house on?
That is entirely possible, and you read about it a lot, you know, in your US market and European market vehicles. But I think in SA, things are a little bit different with that inverted type technology where you can power your home with your car. Yeah. I'm not sure we're quite there yet in terms of our specifications. But, you know, even though we've got energy supply issues, well documented, I mean, we all had load shedding this morning, didn't we? You know, I don't think manufacturers are going to slow down in their push towards EV. Our infrastructure just needs to catch up. Because 5 years from now, especially when your more affordable EVs come to the market, people are going to buy them. So definitely a sign of things to come. We've got 4 in the running this year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just on that point of EVs coming into the country, being more readily available, we've seen manufacturers increasing the range that you can get on EVs. We know that a lot of EVs currently are coming from Europe, where, I don't know, the distance you need to cover isn't as big as, per se, in South Africa, where if you want to travel from Joburg to Cape Town, you need to make sure that your EV has enough range for that. Do we think that infrastructure network is something that needs to develop as quickly outside of the major city centers in South Africa? What is your kind of view on that going forward into the future?
Definitely, if we look at the actual charging network infrastructure, it's improving, but probably not at the rate that is on par with the vehicles that are coming into the country. You know, the last I counted, this year alone, we've probably got about 13 or 14 EVs already in the country, with more to come. The issue now is, you know, a lot of these chargers are based in the metropolitan areas, but very little in the outlying spaces, where if you own an EV now, you have to travel north. If you live in the east and you have to travel north or whatever to just get your vehicle charged. And there has been issues, obviously, with the actual chargers themselves being out of commission, where they're not working. Another issue, that's quite a huge problem, right, if you own an EV. So I think oil companies themselves need to start thinking outside of just, you know, fossil fuel energy. They need to now become electric vehicle power suppliers in terms of, you know, having a charging infrastructure. All of them, if you think about it, it just makes absolute sense. Why not have a charging station at your service station? For me, it's a no-brainer, really, because we are advancing that way. And much like Kodak, you know, when they were huge and, you know, everyone thought, you know what, film will always be film. What happened to Kodak now? You know, they went under because everything became digital, you know, and they just didn't keep up with the times. So I really think energy providers need to start thinking outside of the box, really. And yeah, start almost future-proofing, you know, their businesses to actually cater for EVs, because whether we like it or not.
But won't that network or infrastructure of recharging stations expand exponentially once you get your transport logistics companies moving more towards electric, because I'm sure it would save them, you know, if you look at the price of fuel at the moment, because that's where the grid's going to come from.
Yeah, absolutely, Michelle. In fact, I think more than passenger cars, I think the logistics companies are probably a little bit more advanced in terms of, you know, really going for renewable energy or greener way of transporting goods and stuff. I mean, for example, I know a company like Iveco, they're testing out a couple of their panel vans with certain bakeries where they run off LPG gas, you know?
What?
Yeah. And those are the other sort of aspects that we're looking at in terms of renewable energy. You know, there's still talks of hydrogen being another, but obviously there's issues of storage of hydrogen and all of that stuff, right? But I would say the logistics companies are probably way advanced.
Yeah.
When it comes to that.
They're yeah. Really, so everyone's looking at the vehicle sort of everyday consumer as the driving force behind electric, but we aren't.
Yeah.
Those guys are trying to figure out a way of doing it, and we're just going to benefit from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been doing my own sort of research around electric vehicles and the push towards electric vehicles. I think a lot of manufacturers have been pushed by the likes of Tesla and how much growth they've seen in that market and just pioneering that technology. But I also just wanted to get your opinion on autonomous driving and, I don't know, level 3 AI, where the car just drives itself for you. Obviously, that poses quite unique insurance risks because the person that's driving the car is not necessarily actually responsible for an accident if it happens anymore. What's your opinion on where we are with that in South Africa, or how far we are away from a world where you can just sit back and lounge in your car and let the car take you to where you need to
We're
go?
We're all smiling because we've all done it.
Fredrin, yeah. I think I'll start with you.
Very interesting topic. And I think, is it a goldmine or a can of worms of ethical discussions? Because, you know, like you said, insurance, you know, who's to blame in a situation? And does the car have to decide between the school bus of children or the old lady crossing the street? You know, all those discussions. Anyway, a bit closer to home, the technology is very much here. There are many cars, and not just high-end luxury cars, but also your mid-sized vehicles that are equipped with semi-autonomous technologies, including, fully adaptive cruise control with steering interventions, lane keep assist, and all the rest. It's been on the market for a while now. I mean, I think as far back as 2015 or 16, I can recall experiencing a vehicle with that technology, you know. Then it wasn't so sharp, but I think it's been refined now to a point where obviously you can't take your hands off the wheel. You can for a few seconds, and then in most cases, the car will say, put your hands back on.
Yeah.
These systems are quite smart. They're quite intelligent. But I think full autonomy, especially in our market, I don't know. I think we're still far away off, because we've got some very unique challenges. Aside from the infrastructure, our roads, I mean, taxis, for example, you know, it's not really well sort of regulated in terms of specific lanes for taxis, buses. And, you know, it's perhaps not as chaotic as driving in India, for example. But I think a car could get very easily confused in SA traffic situations. So we're not there. But, you know, I like the technology, though, and I think we need it. Because if you just, when you're driving, notice people around you, how many people are texting and driving, and just being quite reckless and ridiculous. You know, you'll see someone sitting in the fast lane doing 80. You drive past them, it's because they've got their phone on them. You know, and it's these kind of things that lead to collisions and contribute to the horrible high death toll that we have on South African roads. So, yeah, I'm all for it. I just think, you know, like with the energy story, our infrastructure needs to catch up.
Absolutely. Would you like to add to that?
I'd really like to add to that. I think Brendan has really touched on very prudent points there. But we also have a legislation issue, you know, in terms of what happens in an instance of litigation where I know for a fact some of these, high levels of autonomous driving or autonomy, the technology itself, it's still a machine. It's not a human, right? And there's been issues where, especially with Tesla, where, you know, say for instance, here's the scenario, the vehicle is driving and there's an obstacle on the road and there's two things that the car needs to decide. But you must remember, the car is designed to save the occupants and not necessarily, you know, pedestrians or whatever. So it could be an instance where, you know, the computer needs to decide now, you know, do I crash into this truck, right? Which might damage the car, but chances are, you know, the occupant will survive. Or do I plow through the pedestrians on the pavement, because that's a softer target, right? So, you know, there are those issues that are there. And that's why I think the legislation is taking a little bit longer than usual. The technology is there, but we've got those instances where, you know, these are machines. Who takes the liability then? You know, is it the manufacturer, or do you take liability because you've decided, you know, it's hands off? You're leaving, you know, the car to its own devices to do whatever it does. So if it kills people in the process to protect you, then are you liable as a driver, or do you now go back to the manufacturer and say, hey, your technology has now put me into, you know, this instance where, what do I do? You know, people have been injured. So there's a lot. The yeah. technology is already there, but there are sort of aspects that we need to look into before I reckon the technology can be rolled out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks for that, Lerato. Yeah, so we're pleased to see that there are quite a few vehicles in this in the new energy category, not the climate change category.
We could call it that, I guess.
We're doing a lot of work at OM Insure on climate change risk, and we're adamant about also supporting our customers who choose to drive vehicles that are better for the environment. We're still waiting on, as you guys have mentioned, the full autonomy and getting there. There's quite a few obstacles in the way of that as well. Michelle, can you talk about the misconceptions around the COTI processes and how this year's competition addresses these misnomers?
I think it's a belief that people have had for a very, very long time that, you know, you're talking about performance cars and budget cars and everything in between, that when we go and evaluate the cars, we are comparing the budget car head to head with a performance car. And I think that is one aspect of COTI that just confuses people. So I just want to clarify that the finalists are not compared directly to each other. Even in the same category, you might have two different body types. The jury are instructed to compare each finalist with their natural and direct competitors. So when we go to the evaluation phase, if there's vehicle A, the juror gets all the information about vehicle A plus all the information about that particular vehicle's direct competitors in segment. So just because two cars are in the mid-size category doesn't necessarily mean that they're competing head-to-head.
Yes, so they're not just pitted against each other.
No.
And, you know, it's a knockout competition.
No. So they are not being caught, unless they are direct competitors in a segment. I think we've got it this year with the midsize and the compact family. There are a few that overlap, but generally the vehicles are not pitted against each other. And you know, everyone always goes, how can you compare, you know, the Joker is a Picanto to a Porsche? We don't.
thank you for clearing that up. I've thought about that previously myself, and I suffered from that misconception when I thought, oh, how on earth did this Toyota beat a Porsche? Like, how, what kind of criteria are we using here? So thanks for clearing that up, Michelle. So let's leave it there for today. I anticipate that Lerato and Brenwyn, you both together with the rest of the jury, have a tough journey ahead of you, deciding on who wins this year's coveted title. Good luck to you. I thought it would be a fun job, but after getting into the nitty-gritties of what you, all the qualifying criteria and all the things you need to take into account, it's actually quite a tough job. So I think I'll stay on this side of the desk and leave it up to you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lizo. It's a tall order, but I'm sure we'll do our level best to crown, you know, the right car to be our car of the year.
Exactly what he said. Yes.
Cool. Yeah, Lisa, you're gonna have to chat to these guys after the podcast to see if you can't get a number to get a like a little sneak invitation to the evaluation
a
day
test so drive. That they can
take you for a spin.
I don't know if there's any Porsches in the top 21.
Not this year.
But Brenwyn made that Audi sound really good, so I'll take a test drive of the Audi.
So we can make something happen for you.
Thanks, Brenwyn. Thanks, Lerato. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure chatting to you guys today.
Thank you.
Thank you.